the show.
Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. And I want to give you a heads up on what's going to come up later in the show. First of all, we have one of our counselors, James Grosbeck, here to talk about kind of an interesting question that someone posed to us. And that was speaking into her own parents' marriage and where are the boundaries around that? Her parents have been married for a long time and may or may not be kind of struggling on a certain level. And she kind of would like to say something, but what is appropriate and what really should be maintained as a boundary with her being their daughter. So James is going to weigh in on that. Our culture segment is kind of birthed out of a really fun book that I read, an encouraging book by a guy named Ted Kluck. It's a book called Dallas and the Spitfire. And Ted is up in Michigan and built a relationship with a guy, Dallas, who was an ex-con, a drug addict. And the two of them together restored a Triumph Spitfire. That is a car, for those of you who don't know. I'm just a car expert, so I know these things. But just a fun tale, and he's going to kind of talk about what that looked like and how really he was able to overcome his fears of being in relationship with a guy that had kind of a rough past, and here he was kind of the church guy, and shares kind of how that worked out and where they are today. And so leading into that, I have assembled a round table of fun folks who are going to talk about how this plays out in our own lives. And it's what, when Martha and I were talking about this, we referred to as entry-level mentoring and discipleship. Because a lot of us, and I know I've heard from you people that have approached people in your churches to mentor you, and they don't want to. And I'm very sorry about that.
You just got to trick them.
It is very, exactly. You have to trick them. Do not make them think that they have to write Bible studies and, you know, present them to you, or that they have to be some amazing theologian. This is just about doing life with someone who is maybe a couple steps ahead of you, and it could be in a very fun context. You could restore a car, or you could do what we're going to talk about today and the things that have been meaningful to us. So let me introduce Mr. Thomas Voss over there on the end.
Hey. What up, Hollywood?
Hello. I already mentioned this, but I'm appreciating your hair today.
Thank you.
It's a different style. I like it.
The fact that you just stared at it and said, oh, look at your hair, and haven't really given me a, oh, it's cool, that kind of is disconcerting.
I wanted to step into that space and affirm it.
Yeah,
you but know I did I, say it made you taller, and you're already very tall,
this is
so
true.
I'm not sure what to do.
But I do have
that.
A goal, so, okay. You know.
Well, that's good. New to the table is Mr. Steve Reinke. Steve, welcome.
Thanks.
Steve.
I don't have high hair. I have gray hair.
Yeah. You know what? No, I don't understand that, because yours really, it looks blonde.
And it is. But right here, see if those listening on the radio, you can see I'm pointing to my gray hair.
Okay.
But that's right. I'm going to be a grandma soon.
A grandma?
Well, yeah. My son and wife are having a baby girl.
Oh, okay. But, so you'll be a grandpa.
No, it'd be a grandma. If it was a boy, then it'd be a grandpa.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Wow.
I did not know that.
We're covering gender issues
today, too. I was
not aware
with this.
Yes,
yeah.
That'll be later.
That is interesting. So Steve is here at the table, and Martha's here.
I'm here.
Woo-hoo! Martha.
Use some volumizing shampoo this morning.
Your hair, I have to say, looks kind of the same as it does most days.
Oh, that's probably true.
Which is good. It always looks good.
Consistency.
Martha has good, consistent hair. I've been with her on trips, and she, you know, blow dries it and does her standard procedures. So that's good. And here I am, too. So let's
Whose hair also looks good, by the way.
Well, but thank you.
Much like Martha.
My
the same
hair
as I
is often wet when I come to work, because I'm usually on a drastic countdown to get here sometime before 10 a.m.
Well, if you throw it in the dryer first and then put it on, you'd be okay.
I know. I have yet to figure out how to really streamline my morning routine. So anyway, okay, I want to just launch straight into this topic and talk about, and just kind of throw it out to you all that, you know, mentoring and discipleship is not something that is foreign to those of us who are in the church. And is it something that kind of, I mean, when you think of it now, where does it set with you? Because I think a lot of people, it's either, it's something I would like, but I just don't really know how to do it. Does it require a lot of work? Does it blah, 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 blah. What is it that you think of when you think of kind of a relationship with someone that would be a mentoring or discipling relationship? And how does that affect like your willingness to go after it?
You know, for me, it's never been that formalized, oh, we're going to meet once, you know, every Wednesday, and we're going to go through this book together, and what do, you know, I'm going to help you walk through this. For me, I have very specific people in my life that God has brought to me that I can kind of rely on as close community, Some of them are my age. Many of them are much older than me. And they're all at different stages of life. And for me, mentoring has been really critical in where I can go to them and say, here's what I'm going through. And kind of just living life together with them. They, in my opinion, they bring a different perspective because they've either been there or they've had friends who've, you know, they've seen go through the same thing. So for me, it's nothing formalized. It's very much simply close people in my life who are at different stages than I am that I can rely on for help and information.
Now, did you have to go after them, though? I mean, is it something you said it's not something you formally set
right.
up? So is it something you're like, huh, I wonder what they think about this? And so you just ask them?
You know, initially it was just kind of, I saw an interest in getting to know them better as a person mm-hmm. and just sent out like you would with starting any friendship and just developing it that way. I have been blessed that I have a lot of married couples in my life that for some reason I've been able to easily build relationships with. So mine was nothing formalized. I know that's not the way it is for a lot of people out there. But yeah, I kind of just sought out as a friendship with the family or a friendship with the couple, and it just started from there.
Mm-hmm. You would think I would like the formalized type mm-hmm. of thing of like a schedule. And mm-hmm. you would, yeah.
Color-coded.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. But I had kind of a poor experience in college when I had a mentor that kind of put a bad taste in my mouth because they had this formalized program where you sign up and they'll match you mm-hmm. with someone. And I think I was, you know, maybe a sophomore or junior and thought, I'm going to get matched with this young mom with the cutest little kids and the best marriage. And I'll just, you know, learn how to be a great wife and mother one day. And they actually paired me with a single woman who was probably, I would think, in her mid to late 40s. She was the worker in the guard shack on campus, and she drove the bus for students to get from the dorms to classes. Mm-hmm. And it was not what I pictured at all, of just major disappointment, mm-hmm. which I realize now I should have mm-hmm. listened to her, because who knew I was going to be single in 30, you know? I could have learned some stuff from her, but it really just shocked me. And we met a couple times and just kind of fizzled out. Mm-hmm. So I've been scared to jump in really ever since then.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but there's a point when there's a young man came and asked me several years ago, would I mentor him? And my first thought was, are you crazy? I have a degree. I mean, I have a master's of divinity. I've been to Bible college, and you would think that, oh, yeah, that'd be easy. I would rather talk to 1,000 people than to one. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody would come and they asked me that question, my first thought was utter panic. Mm-hmm. And yet we have been able to develop a relationship, and it's helped me in that sense to be able to communicate more one-on-one mm-hmm. than otherwise. So it is a more formalized thing.
Yeah.
But okay. It's also centered around something we have in common, which is to lead our youth group.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that, Steve, about how that kind of formed, because I'm sure it wasn't just like, you know, you saying, I'm really the best person to mentor you right now, and so let me just start being involved in your life. I mean, I'm sure it had to happen a little more naturally.
Well, yeah, once I got him out of the cage and he agreed. No, actually, he came to me several years ago, even before he went to a Bible college down in Peru, and he asked if I would do this for him. And again, my thought was panic. You know, what? And so we kind of built that relationship, and we spent some time together. And then he went to Bible college, and he came back, and we needed a leader for the youth. While being the elder in the church, that I would have the relationship with him, then it was easy to continue that. And now we're able to talk about what we're going to do for the youth, and that leads to other discussions, you know, like where he's going through the book of John. Well, what do you think about this passage and all of that? And so we can talk about things, and then that branches out to other things. Mm-hmm. So it's not a formalized, gee, we're going to go through this curricula. We have this, and so we're going to go through that. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, well, what are we doing? How are you going to handle that? We had a little discussion one day about how to answer questions. And so it's more informal, although we meet regularly, mm-hmm. but it's more informal. We don't have an agenda that we go through.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you had, Steve, kind of a stigma, and those of you that listen, which you will, into the next segment with Ted Kluck, he talks about how his idea was, oh, you know, the person that a young person is going to want to mentor them is going to be like that youth leader type who's really cool and just wants to hang around and maybe like stop by a coffee shop and then go snowboarding or whatever. I mean, did you have any of this like, I'm kind of this old married guy, and what, you know, what can I mean, not that you're old, but older than this guy, you know, but just...
Yeah, yeah, I'm getting there, you know.
But just feeling like, am I going to be able to relate to him? What's this going to look like?
Well, like I said, you know, when he came to me, there was just the panic, but there was also a sense that he's younger than my son. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really know, you know, what to expect out of this. What do you want from me? Mm-hmm. I didn't have any illusions about going snowboarding.
You should have.
Uh-huh. No, see, my fear is that I'd like snowboarding, right. And with the cost of going snowboarding, it wouldn't happen. Yeah.
There you go.
But there was that sense of apprehension about what was going to happen. But the more we get together, the more we talk, the easier that becomes.
Mm-hmm. That's good. What so maybe Thomas and Martha weigh in here as far as practically, when you think of like boots on the ground today, people who are in your life, what does it look like? What are you doing right now?
You know, there is one family in particular here in Colorado that the joke is that everyone who just comes and visits thinks I live there because I'm there so much. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't imagine life right now without them. I'm the only one in my family to ever leave Oklahoma since, you know, we came to this country. So, you know.
Back around the revolution.
Right, okay. You know, back whenever. So for me to leave was a huge thing for just my family to accept. They were completely supportive of it. But the one thing that I quickly realized is that the importance of family. Like, in that sense, it was really good for me to leave my family because now I have a better understanding of how important they are in my life. So God really kind of granted a prayer request that I didn't even realize I had, and that was providing a Colorado family for me. Their names are Robert and Elena, and they, you know, just have always been there for me. I'll just show up in tears and, you know, Elena will just sit there with me and just walk me through things. It helps that she's a licensed counselor. So, you know, I have that benefit in my life. The joke was I never saw a counselor, and Elena was always like, yeah, sure you haven't, you know. She was always there for me. And then Robert, you know, is just this good old boy, also from Oklahoma, who, in my opinion, is like the epitome of a man's man, you know. Mm-hmm. And I never really was that. And he kind of walked me through some great things in my life to really kind of show me what it meant to be a man of God, mm-hmm. More than just being a man. Mm-hmm. And so it's been really cool to just be a part of their family.
Mm-hmm. One thing I've been able to plug into, I think maybe for a year now, a woman that I used to work with in a different department, but she invited me to be a part of this writers, editors group where... Well, I'd like to think I'm the youngest one there. I think I am.
But, hold on to that, Martha.
Yeah.
You won't be someday.
That's true.
You'll be the oldest one at the table at some point, yes.
That's good to remember. Of I've been poured into and poured into others in the future. But what I just appreciate about this group is that, you know, just learning professionally, you know, what walk they've been on. Of several of them have published books and worked with major Christian ministries here in Colorado Springs. And we also, you know, just get into how can we pray for each other. And we talk about relationships a lot. And mm-hmm. it's just neat to have, you know, these women who are 40s, 50s to talk to mm-hmm. who are ahead of the journey from me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have we had a formal mentoring program here at work that I had volunteered for and had 3 20-something girls in my group who were just a hoot. And so... Like, you know, it's so funny how they just really were very honest and forthcoming about their struggles here at work and stuff. But one of them had just shot me an email about going to lunch yesterday. And so we went to lunch together and she just was able to her husband is, you know, she's young, has a husband, is gone for a few weeks now. And she was just kind of pouring out her heart of just things that, you know, she's noticed now and just things she's struggling with and everything. And she kept saying, I'm so sorry to put this on you, or I'm so sorry to, you know, and I'm like, whatever, I just want to listen, you know, mm-hmm. and just recognizing that, you know, for me, someone who can start talking and really not stop, to actually listen and say, you know, that could be a valuable thing that I could provide. It's just a listening ear over a sandwich and soup. So what other things have you guys seen, you know, that's been a benefit from just having specifically maybe someone who is a little further along the road than you or someone who's a few steps behind you, kind of that cross-generational influence that's been helpful?
Yeah, I have Robert and Elena who they are, you know, they've just started their family. They have the most amazing, beautiful kids. And, you know, I'm honored to be like considered their brother slash uncle, you know. And then I have another couple, Gary and Kim, and their kids are kind of right now at the stage where one just got engaged and the other one is, you know, about to move out of the house. And being able to meet with them and talk to them about their progression in life and just everything that God has brought them through is another thing that I absolutely value and treasure. You know, I have this unique opportunity to be close to two very different families in two very different stages of their family. And, you know, one are about to become empty nesters and they're thinking about going and doing ministry together. And then the other ones are just, you know, worried about keeping their family healthy and fed and happy, you know. And so for me, very practically, that's, you know, been a treasure and an honor for me to just be a part of that. And, you know, Gary and I meet more on a regular basis. And a couple of things that I heard both of you say, you know, from my side, you know, I do that. I'm like, Gary, I'm so sorry I'm putting this on you, blah, blah, blah. You know, you must meet with so many people and everyone wants to meet with you. And for him to stop and say, no, you need to realize that it's not a drain on me to meet with you because I'm learning and benefiting from meeting with you just as much as you are from me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's awesome to hear as well. And I think, Steve, you might be able to speak more into this. But to know that they wouldn't be meeting with you if it was a drain. Mm-hmm. They're meeting with you because God has gifted them with something you see and vice versa. They see something in you that they want to develop and they want to help, you know, protect mm-hmm. as kind of, you know, that progression through life. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, that whole aspect of, you know, one day we'll be the oldest at the table. You know, God walked me through a lot of stuff where I used to speak very specifically into middle school kids' lives, and it was just really awesome to be a part of. And then I was in a place where I realized I thought I was going to be able to do that, and I wasn't. It was in a job situation at a summer camp. And kind of walking through that idea of my peers can also be mentored by me just like they can mentor me, and just developing the relationships. And I think that's why my aspect of mentorship is more of just get to know them. Mm-hmm. You see something of value in them and you want to know them better, and then it develops into something further from there.
Mm-hmm. I also found that I can get lost into what I know. I had a music professor in Bible college who said that we don't know what we like what we know. Mm-hmm. And I can get into a habit of things that I'm comfortable with. But by meeting with this young man, it opens me up to say that there are, you know, there's new things. There are things that I need to be acquainted with, especially with dealing with the youth. One of the guys that I work for asked me once, were vinyl records dual-sided?
Uh-huh. It's a valid question.
It is a valid question. But that's because...
What are records again?
Yeah, what are... Exactly. And so, but it's that ability then to be able to look at somebody and to have your view refreshed. Mm-hmm. Instead of being come into your own little cocoon, because we get very comfortable where we're at. This helps me to do that. And in fact, I was excited to hear about, you know, talking to middle schoolers. I think that even young people, even in the mid-20s, should be looking at how can I reach out to high school kids who are going through some of the things mm-hmm. that in college or just out of, you have experience. Can mm-hmm. you help them through some of these issues that they think their parents are just too old, they don't understand? Mm-hmm. Well, I have been through that, yes. I did make it through high school. But there is that mentoring to assume that because, you know, you're 20, 25, even 30, that you need somebody older. It's also a point, as in 1 Timothy, to teach those who teach others who teach. Can we reach out to those who are even younger?
Yeah. Well, and let's talk just briefly here about how we can do that in a way that is not intimidating. Because, again, you know, I think for me, what I've noticed when I think of a couple of the older ladies that I know and that I feel free to talk to, we also do fun things together. Like I go to movies with them. I go, you know, I love mm-hmm. to hike. And so if I can pull one of them along on a hike, that's just a great opportunity. I mean, you're going on a 3-hour hike. What are you going to do but just talk to people? You know, I mean, it's,
and up here,
it's not, like,
not,
hiking
it's not like
you.
I can do my laundry or check email or whatever. So it's a great opportunity. And so I feel like, you know, when I have kind of that background and we just have a normal life and normal experiences, then the deeper things can kind of come up. And how have you guys seen that happen where just living your life and stuff that mm-hmm. you're interested in, whether hobbies or things that you normally want to fit into your workday, by including other people, it has allowed opportunity for conversation?
Yeah, I have a buddy of mine who he's a coworker here as well. His name is Jeremy. I think he's been on the podcast with you guys. Great guy. And he and I kind of I mean, we take live life together to the extreme. I mean, you know, we work together, so we're always going to lunch together. We're always just stopping by each other's cubes. We used to work out together on a regular basis. I'm trying to convince him we need to do it again, more for my sake because I'm slacking. But yeah,
just, I noticed you're kind of going downhill.
So yeah, I don't want to. Thanks for that encouragement.
That's why the hair goes up.
First
so we
the
don't
hair,
look,
yeah. then the golly, oh, encouraging day here in the studio. But yeah, so he and I just developed a really great friendship. You know, we're very close to each other in age. We are in different parts of life, which is kind of cool because we can balance each other out that way. But yeah, we just share everything with each other. You know, we encourage each other in life and then also are there to lean on each other when we need it. And it's definitely not your typical quote-unquote mentor relationship because it's completely two-way. It's a definitely a, you know, a mutually beneficial relationship in that regard. But yeah, it's impacted me incredibly. You know, he's the guy that I don't feel like I have to set an appointment with. Mm-hmm. I can just call him or text him and be like, you know, or we need to go out or something like that, you know, mm-hmm. Christian out, you know, the movies, not, you know, clubbing or anything like that. Often. Uh-huh. So, yeah. So having those close relationships that are, you know, even the same age or even the same place in life, maybe it's even your roommate, maybe your best friends, has been completely beneficial for me.
I think one of the things to build on that is to go to somebody and ask them, you know, if you want to learn to work on cars, you want to be gardening, you want to learn computers, you're having a problem with your finances, there's a problem with a job, rather than go to somebody and say, will you be my mentor? I mean, to that person, is you're saying, here's my spiritual life. You're responsible. And they're going to panic. Mm-hmm. But if you go to somebody, you recognize they have an ability that you need, that you can go to them, will you help me with this? Mm-hmm. And then that will naturally come out. As with the young man that I'm mentoring, we talk about all kinds of different things. And sometimes we get pretty personal, sometimes it's pretty deep, other times it's really frivolous. Mm-hmm. But that's all right, because right. that relationship is built. Our friends are built not upon, gee, how are you going to help me today, but what can we do together? Right. Can we encourage one another? Just sometimes have fun. Mm-hmm. And so that sort of normal activity, maybe that's a way to approach somebody instead of, will you be my mentor?
Mm-hmm. Or even recognizing situations you're in of seeing the people around you of, wow, I can learn this and that from so-and-so. I'm actually in a monthly craft group with a lot of young moms. And funny thing is, like, every time we get together, someone's pregnant. I mean, really.
Not you, though.
Not me,
no.
But it's good. We've been meeting for like a year and a half or 2 years, and there's always someone pregnant. And just to hear their stories, like sometimes, I mean, yes, as a single woman, it's easy to get annoyed by young moms always telling their birthing stories and their engagement stories again
or
and
gross.
Again.
It's fine.
But there's also things you can learn from them, and just a great opportunity to ask questions of, I might be working on something at Boundless, and I'm like, hey, I should ask these ladies of, what do you think about this or that, you know, mm-hmm. how they interact with their husbands or things they've learned in their marriages. So mm-hmm. that's been a neat opportunity.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I've seen that too, as I've had the chance to, like I was saying before, just live life with women and just kind mm-hmm. of feel like, oh yeah, you know, I think of them as where they are right now, when in reality, they've been through my life stage. They were single once, they went, you know, many of them were in the workforce at one point, many of them. And so it's kind of that opportunity to swap stories in a sense and feel, I mean, I feel like several women that I think of, kind of Steve, back to what you were saying, if I see someone, like if someone invites me over to their house and they made something like amazing for dinner, I could easily say, you know, hey, would you come over to my place sometime and show me how to make that or whatever? And then I get the ingredients, or I get together a little group of maybe my friends and bring them over, and I can introduce them to that person and stuff and kind of, you know, spread the web a little bit more. Or, you know, I've had one guy that used to work here was really into not astrology, astronomy. John, and I just remember him inviting a bunch of us, like kind of younger single people, out to some hill or whatever up way up the mountain to go stargazing and stuff. And it was just the coolest thing, and it's something he's good at. He has all this crazy equipment, and we just got to know him, and it was just such a fun opportunity, you know, something we wouldn't have had otherwise. And it was kind of you know, a great opportunity to get to know him too. So I think those are good examples of ways that really it is just kind of living life. And like I said, we always think, you know, well, I just have 24 hours in the day. Well, most people fit in eating, most people fit in, you know, working out. So, you know, if they're into that, you know, you could, so it's just like pull someone along with you and don't just, you know, work out or eat to, you know, some TV show or something, Family Feud. I mean, we, you know, whatever. not, you know, not helpful. So, well, cool. I think these are great ideas. Those of you out there that are kind of wrestling with this, or maybe you are in a good relationship right now, or maybe you're even thinking of things where you're like, oh, I wouldn't have thought that of as a mentor relationship, but maybe that is, and maybe I have learned something. Throw us a comment on the blog, because we want to see what experiences have worked for you. Those of you who are, you know, a little bit older and have had the chance to pour into other people, share those experiences as well. And hopefully we can learn from that and grow from that. And maybe as we head into a new year, we will see some new opportunities to be doing that. A lot of things we have to deal with. And some things are actual, you know, struggles. And if you feel like you're dealing with something that's like really heavy, I mean, you don't want, I mean, you don't want to be a poor Steve who, you know, let's not unload our massive issues on people in their first thing, which reminds me, I want to give everyone a shout out and remind you that we have here at Focus on the Family, a family care center. And that is a 1-800 number where you can call and get advice on stuff. You can be referred to a local counselor. If you have something that you're really dealing with, that you feel is maybe holding you back and you want to get, some help on that, call us at 1-800, the letter A, and the word family. Again, that's 1-800, the letter A, and the word family. And we certainly want to kind of get you on the road in that direction. But many of us, you know, that may be an issue that we're struggling with or something, but many of us just want a friend and just want someone who can be part of our lives and who can kind of help us to that next level and give us some encouragement or maybe help us get past a few of our fears. And many of us in young adulthood, you know, there's always that next thing that we feel we have to do, and some of us are just stuck. So, well, good thoughts, you guys, and thanks so much for being part of this conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. My father's father broke this ground. Daddy, mine too, he laid him down. Only God knows what they found beneath. Now here I stand in my own boots, axe to grind and a point to prove. Tangled up in my own roots, it seems. I got treasure up in heaven, I got dirt all over me. I have only scratched the surface of the man I'm meant to be. I got something down inside of me that only you can see. Help me dig a little deeper now and set that diamond free. Why do I do the things I do? All the things that I don't want to. Act like I don't fear you at all. Hard head and a heart of stone. Older now but I haven't grown. Any riches that I have to show are small. But I got treasure up in heaven. I got dirt all over me. I have only scratched the surface of the man I'm meant to be. I got something down inside of me that only you can see. Help me dig a little deeper now and set that diamond free. Set it free. I got treasure up in heaven. We are here for this week's culture segment, and we love doing culture segments because we get to meet and talk to interesting and fun people, people that maybe you don't get the chance to hear from every day. And so this time around is no exception. We have Ted Kluck on the line. Hey, Ted.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, although we have had a severe dip in weather here in Colorado, so fall has come. But
well, we live in a perpetual dip in the weather right. here in Michigan, so no sympathy for me.
I hear you. My family's up in northern Minnesota, so they feel that pain as well. But I keep telling them they need to move here. I don't know why they don't. But
I know. It's beautiful out there. You guys are lucky.
Beautiful. No humidity, no bugs in the summer. My goodness. So, well, cool. We are continuing our theme for this week's show, which we are kind of talking about mentorship and discipleship and kind of how we can take the fear out of it and the sting out of it and just the kind of the freakiness out of it, I guess, as we would say. And you have a great example that you have outlined in a book. It's called Dallas and the Spitfire. You co-wrote it with Dallas, the guy that you were discipling. And I love the subtitle is An Old Car, an Ex-Con, and an Unlikely Friendship. And it really does detail kind of where you went in a relationship with a guy that, you know, might not have happened had you not been strategically kind of placed in one another's circumstances. And I just want to start by talking about that. And I guess I will just say, you know, for the sake of time and so everyone's on the same page here, you basically met this guy and decided, rather than sitting around in a coffee shop, I like the way that you made the distinction there, you know, talking over a latte and pouring out emotions, you decided to restore an old car together, a Triumph Spitfire, right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, the coffee shop is kind of the official meeting place of evangelicals. You know, you go into any Starbucks in the world, and there's probably like six worship guys and three youth pastors and, you know, the other assorted smattering of evangelicals. And not that there's anything wrong with that. I myself am a big coffee shop guy, but I knew pretty early on in our relationship that wasn't going to be a context that worked for us. Not because we couldn't talk necessarily, but because I think we had so much ground to cover, and you know there was so much in his life in particular that I just didn't know about, that we really needed a context that was more comfortable for both of us. And you know, we both had this interest in old cars. He had this incredible talent for, you know, car repair and restoration, and I'd always kind of wanted to do it. So I think the Holy Spirit in his infinite wisdom just brought us together when we needed each other and kind of put this idea in front of us, and we decided to run with it for better or for worse.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about, if you could just summarize a little bit of his story and then talk about how you two were kind of paired up, and really how, what I want to know is how you agreed to start meeting with him, because, you know, it sounds easier the way that you lay it out than I'm guessing it was. And I'm assuming you had some second thoughts about it. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh, absolutely. Tons of second thoughts. And the
fourth,
way it happened,
fourth
really.
And fifth thoughts.
Yeah, and fourth and fifth thoughts, exactly. This guy had about the most opposite, you know, upbringing type experience to mine, as you can imagine. You know, both of his parents, when I met him a couple of years ago when he was 20, both of his parents were deceased. He'd been in and out of prison already three times at that point, was a drug addict, a drug dealer. And when we met, he was in a residential program called the Lansing City Rescue Mission, which is where he came to know the Lord. And when I met Dallas and when I heard his story, you know, it's so easy, I think, for us who have, for those of us who have been in the church our whole lives and have grown up there, we kind of become, sadly, I think, just kind of content with the gospel. We kind of take it for granted, which is a horrible thing to say, but it's true to some degree. But when I met Dallas and when I heard his story, I was overwhelmed, man. I was overwhelmed by the goodness of a Lord who would pursue a guy like this and turn his life around, you know. And that didn't mean that Dallas was then perfect. I mean, he still had a lot of problems. He still had a lot of things he was working through. I think working with him, for me, it uncovered a lot of my own problems. You know, I think it uncovered a lot of my own sin and a lot of the ways that I wasn't trusting the Lord. So all that to say, I really felt like the Holy Spirit brought us together. He ended up showing up at our church a few times and really didn't look the part. You know, I mean, our church is sort of typical suburban Reformed church, you know, khakis and golf shirts on all the guys. And, you know, every family has 16 kids. And Dallas just didn't look the part. You know, he's a huge guy with
And this is where this is where Kevin DeYoung pastors, right?
Yeah, this is where Kevin DeYoung pastors.
Okay, yeah.
So,
our
you know,
audience
tattoos
knows him.
From neck to wrist, and you know, it's just an unusual looking guy. And I think, you know, in my writing career, having written about Mike Tyson, having done the stuff with pro football and pro wrestling, and I kind of have a comfort level with unusual people, and I have an attraction even to unusual people and unusual stories, and I think that's really where it all started for us.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I want to know, because I'm assuming, being the good evangelical that you are, that when you went into this, you thought to yourself, okay, success in this has to look like something. You know, we all have our little arbitrary, you know, goals that we want to meet. And we're like, okay, well, I want to do this right. And I want to, you know, I want this to be successful. What did success look like for you when you began? And did it change from the beginning of the relationship to the end?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's really pathetic for me to talk about what success looked like in the beginning, because it illustrates how ill-equipped for this I was. I mean, I truly just thought it would kind of be the typical URC, you know, discipleship experience where we would meet at the coffee shop twice a month, and I would ask him how things are going, and he would tell me, and we would pray, and that would be it, you know, and it's shameful to verbalize that, but that's just always how it had looked before. And pretty soon after I got into things with Dallas, when I started to get to know him, we started to talk, when we started to kick around the idea of working on the car, it became clear to me that he needed a dad sometimes, he needed a brother sometimes, he needed just a buddy sometimes, he needed somebody to push back sometimes. And the scary part for me, and I think where the second and third and fourth thoughts came in, were A, realizing I was ill-equipped for that, but B, realizing that, you know, at least for a season, the Lord had called me to it. And what's it going to look like for me? What's it going to look like for my family? You know, am I going to take every phone call? Am I going to be that available and go all in with someone like that? And it was a scary thing to think about, you know, but I can honestly say in retrospect that, you know, the Holy Spirit was with us every step of the way. And he equipped us, I think, to do what we needed to do in that.
Yeah. And I love how in the book you really do tell the story of what this looked like on a day-to-day level, because he ended up going to Bible college, you know,
right.
He was away for a while, and really a completely countercultural experience for him, I'm sure, kind of a fundamentalist experience up there where they were supposed to be wearing ties and, you know, no drinking, dancing, you know, all of that kind
right.
of stuff. And he had to toe the line there, and it was hard. And you talk about the ins and outs of really having to do, you know, for lack of a better term, some hand-holding through some very difficult mm-hmm. times for him, times of him struggling with anger, with a relationship that he started while he was up there. And mm-hmm. what did you kind of get into this and feel as you were moving along, like, you're almost reliving some of your own heartaches or some of your own frustrations or fears that you had growing up?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, but also looking ahead to what it would be like to kind of parent my own boys through college. You know, I have two little boys in the house, 10 and 6, and, you know, it's not too terribly long down the road before they'll be there and I'll be kind of taking those phone calls on their behalf. So, yeah, it was a strange confluence of looking back and looking forward, and at the same time not really having any idea what I was doing, you know, other than the Lord's put me here and I need to try to be supportive, you know. And I wanted to be supportive because he was my friend, you know, and I wanted to get him through that experience in one piece. And and again I'm amazed by God's grace, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys who we're completely kind of fumbling around in the dark. And really the car for us was the one place we felt comfortable and like we felt we had some measure of control, especially Dallas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When he was in the garage, when he was working on the car, he was absolutely in his element, you know, and he was totally in control of that situation. And I was so impressed with what he did in that context.
Yeah, and I like how you really did set that up in the sense of it was something that he had done with his dad, and so you really identified that as something that he possibly could even show you a few things about, you know, and it could
he
be
showed
a,
me everything about it, you know.
Well, that's right, because you said you went to Jiffy Lube and agonized over whether or not you would find the be able to pop the hood.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Well, it sounds like you learned a few things. Okay, so in between all of the cleaning out carburetors and everything else that you were doing, you really did have to do some hard things. And you talk at one point in the book about a letter that you had to write to Dallas. I can't remember if it was an actual letter or a text or an email, but basically, you had a lot of fear around him, you know, when he was out on his own. Like, what decisions is he going to make? When he was heading down into Ann Arbor, was he going to slip up? What was this going to look like? And you talked to him basically about this this ex-stripper that he knew was going to, you know, potentially spend some time with. And what about that letter was so hard to write? And what ultimately prompted you to say, this is something I need to step in and do?
Yeah, I think, you know, the answer to the second part is the Lord, yeah. You know, just nudging me to do that. But what was so hard about it was just, I'm not a confrontive guy by nature. You know, I'm an agreeable kind of guy. And I think at some level that makes you a great friend because people love to be around a person like that. But on the other hand, it makes it hard to do really the hard work of friendship or relationships, which sometimes means confronting. And, you know, it was tough for me to do that. That doesn't come natural to me. I'm not a guy who kind of seeks out conflict and confrontation. But, you know, as ill-equipped as I was, you know, again, the Lord walked me through that. And I hope Dallas felt loved by those things. You know, I think one of the things that he lacked growing up was anyone in his life who would do that for him, you know. And I think there were so many things that he didn't get to experience, like, you know, meals with the family around the dinner table and, you know, Christmases where people were getting him gifts. And some of these things we were able to give him, but I think we were also able to give him, you know, this is what it looks like when somebody, you know, loves you enough to say, please don't do that, you know. And I knew in our case that I was a man and he was a man, and that ultimately at the end of the day I was going to have to say, you know, the Lord who began a good work in Dallas's life is going to see it through to fruition. Regardless of what I do here, but also I think I have a responsibility to do something too.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think, you know, even just briefly here, what do you think by extension the relationship with your wife and your kids offered him in the sense of kind of that family environment?
Yeah, I think just that, you know, some stability. I think logistically, you know, it was just a place to get a great meal and be taken care of a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. So it gave him that. I think, you know, being around the boys gave him a chance to see, you know, a family and a father-son relationship that, you know, was maybe a little bit healthier. But, yeah, hopefully just a kind, warm place where he could go through some tough things and not feel alone.
Sure. Now, we talk a lot, you know, whenever we talk about discipleship or mentorship, kind of what we're doing in the sense of pouring into other people's lives and what we're hoping to accomplish. But what would you say, Ted, looking back on this, what did this experience really do for you? How did it grow you?
Yeah, I think that could be summed up in the phrase, learning to more fully trust the Lord. Anybody who's ever been in any kind of relationship in life, whether it's a friendship or, you know, a dating relationship or a discipleship relationship, you know that it's not clean, it's not easy. Anytime you're dealing with expectations and emotions from people, it's risky, you know, and there's a lot of risk involved in that. And I think for people my age, you know, especially as we have our own kids and our own families and we get a little bit older, it's so easy to kind of close yourself off from anything risky, you know, because you feel like, oh, my plate's so full with family, I couldn't possibly, you know, take on this friendship or take on this or that. But, you know, for me, and again, growing up in the church, we always talk about trusting God and we pay a lot of lip service to that. But there were so many times through this and still that I have to tangibly trust the Lord with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a difference between saying that and actually doing it and releasing some of those anxieties, casting some of those cares upon the Lord, because he does care for us. You know, that's a promise in Scripture that we can cling to. And we don't always know what that's going to look like. We don't know that, you know, everything's going to work out perfectly and he's going to get the job or the Christian wife or whatever. But we do know that we can cast our cares on the Lord because he does care for us.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. So you're talking right now, Ted, to a lot of young adults out here who, you know, maybe feel that it's something that, you know, again, we're talking to a lot of evangelicals who are in the churches, who are wearing the skinny jeans maybe, and maybe thinking, you know, what do I have to offer? I'm either too young, or I'm too busy, or I'm in college, or I'm broke, or whatever. What does this look like for them? Paint them the picture of how they could, you know, and when we talk about entry level mentoring or discipleship, what can they actually do with what they have?
Yeah, a couple suggestions come to mind immediately. One is, you know, discipleship doesn't have to be the awkward thing that, you know, that you have to kind of decide to do. I think the Lord used an interest that I already had at the time, which was the car, as a way for Dallas and I to do this kind of naturally. You know, and we tend to think of, discipleship as the weird twice monthly coffee shop meeting, when in fact, you know, anytime it's ever worked in my life, it's been around something that I like already. You know, for me as an athlete growing up, it was sports, it was football, it was boxing. You know, some of these relationships that I met in my sports, that provided the context for the discipleship. So I think number one, you know, look at what your interests and affinities already are, and see how you can engage people within that. But also, I think very little of what I offered Dallas was outrageous or over the top. It had nothing to do with me being especially talented or equipped for it. I mean, a lot of times it was just answering the phone, you know, and being there to listen, being there to pray, being there to talk, just being there to hang out with. So, again, we think of discipleship as something sometimes that other people do, like you have to be a youth pastor, like, you know, the associate pastor of your church to be able to really do it, when in fact, I kind of learned on the fly, and a lot of it was just being available, and we can be available for other people, and I think we can be poured out to a certain degree for other people, and in the midst of it, you're going to feel exhausted, you might feel a little bit tapped out, you know, but you can know that the Lord will walk with you through that.
Yeah, that's good. I know that you and your wife gave, I think you gave Dallas for Christmas, a French press coffee pot with some coffee.
Yeah.
And that kind of became a little appendage for him. He really, really got into that. And but I know that there was somewhere near the end of the book where you talked about how you had this conversation with him about him maybe inking you a little bit. Did that actually happen, or what? How'd that transaction come about? Did that go down, or what?
You know what? It didn't go down.
No,
it didn't go down for a couple of reasons. One, it seemed a little bit too permanent for me, and also I felt like the tattoo was something that you shouldn't try to get for free. You should probably overpay for it, and you get what you pay for. So, if and when I ever do that, I'm probably going to go in a different direction, but there are a lot of things, and guys will do this, and if you've been around guys much, you know that they, you know, Dallas and I were always kicking around ideas. You know, I was going to train him for the Golden Gloves, and I was going to do this and do that, and he was going to ink me up, and, you know, about an eighth of anything that any guy discusses ever comes to be, but, you know, the fact that we got the car to work, and we got that one, you know, pushed through into reality, it feels pretty good.
That is pretty good. Yeah, I'm wondering if I were to get a tattoo, if I would get it from a guy who basically tattooed his own neck under the influence of alcohol or whatever. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, you know what? That maybe isn't the resume that you're looking for out of your tattoo artist. You know, I think we
exactly.
can both safely say that.
Exactly. I want to go to a place where they're going to offer me a latte when I sit in there. You know, I just kind of can get a feel for it. There are some candles
Absolutely.
Burning. I'm just saying, you
Absolutely.
Know, maybe a few MDs that actually work there.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I couldn't agree more.
That's good. Well, this is, I mean, I didn't even get into the fact that this is really a fun book as well. You're very funny, Ted, in the way that you write, and just the way that this story unfolds is extremely encouraging, and I hope it will be for our audience. So I want everyone to know, again, that the title of the book is Dallas and the Spitfire. We're talking here to Ted Kluck. We'll be linking to the book on the blog, so you can check it out there. But Ted, I just want to thank you for just providing a great story. As we finish here, where is Dallas now? Give us a little update on your relationship and kind of what he's up to now and what you're up to.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we've kind of lost touch, which is sad. But in a way, you know, he's self-sufficient now. He's working actually at the Lansing City Rescue Mission, which is where he got clean. So,
yep.
You know, he's got so much talent. And if you've read the book, which you have, and I by the way, I appreciate the fact that you've read it. You know, your questions were great, but you know that he's a super talented guy, and the Lord gave him some real gifts for speaking and communicating. I thought his sections of the book were great that he wrote, and the writing of the book actually it created some tension between us. You know, not so much the writing, but the publishing. You know, I think seeing his life out there, which sounded like a good idea in the beginning, and when it came to reality, it was a little bit tougher for him. But I just want to say that he did an amazing job. I think, you know, his sections are the best ones in the book, and the Lord's using his gifts right now for him to minister to guys who, you know, were in the same spot he was in a couple years ago.
That's cool. And I think it's a great testimony in the sense, exactly what you said, that, you know, even if we want to sugarcoat it and say that we're saved and, oh, you know, all the platitudes, I just want to be a vessel of the Lord and I want to be whatever. I mean, to see your struggles and your failures in print is a difficult thing. And I think that's really cool that he was willing to tell his story and allow you to tell your part in it as part of that. So awesome. Well, thanks so much, Ted, for being part of this conversation.
Thank you guys for having me.
Up with the dawn and the rooster crow. Been that way since I don't know. Throw a little water on my face. Get out the door and greet the day. Putting my knees down on the ground. Sing to the Lord in a weary sound. Asking for the strength I need. Break my heart like a weed. Just don't know yet. Let's harvest this field from sunrise to sunset. The master is coming, we are not done yet. We are not done yet.
We are opening up this week's inbox for another question that has been submitted by you, one of our listeners. And James Grosbeck is here in the studio with me to answer it from our counseling department. Welcome, James.
Good to be here, Lisa.
Great to have you. Okay, this listener is asking, I have noticed some of the inevitable problems in my parents' relationship. I really want to help them, but giving them advice seems potentially obnoxious because they have been married for a long time. What should my priorities be, and what should and shouldn't I do?
I really love this question. We just get this type of question just all the time, Lisa. And it's written by young people that really want to be of help to mom and dad. And that's really exciting. But they tend to get frustrated with the advice that they tend to give, or they tend to feel overly responsible for their parents' relationship. So I really like this question. And our writer is very right to question whether or not she should give advice to mom and dad. And the simple answer to that is absolutely not. Don't do that. If you are asked by dad, hey, you know, child of mine whom I love, tell me what I should do and what could I do to make things better with your mom, then maybe a short answer would be appropriate. But just kind of coming and giving advice probably isn't the way to go. However, we can do other things. And what I would really suggest to this person is that it's right to question about giving advice. But what you can do is you can state what your concern is, your desire, and your hope. Now, that's a statement. That's not advice. So what you're saying is, this is what I'm concerned about. This is what I desire. This is what I hope for you. Now, what I did was, because I had this question beforehand, I actually wrote a response, which why I would encourage this writer to do is to write something out. So I put myself in this position, and this is what I would say to either mom or dad, or maybe even to both of them. And it goes something like this. It seems that the two of you struggle when you talk with each other. It really concerns me and makes me anxious and sad. I really want to help, but I really know it's not my place to give advice, and I might be wrong anyway. But my hope, my wish, and my desire for the two of you is to someday talk with each other in a loving and caring way without hurting each other so. I hope the best for the two of you. And I'm very concerned that the two of you may get a divorce. Now, I worked on that, but that's what you need to do. You need to really be exact what you want to communicate. And here, we're communicating concern, we're communicating a wish, a hope, and desire. And then you just leave it there. Mm-hmm. And that's the time where you can exit and be with your friends. But
well, it's good. I like the way that that's stated, because what it does is where the parents could easily say, oh, no, you don't understand our relationship. You don't know what's going on. It's not that. They can't deny the perception that they're giving.
Exactly.
So the child is saying, you know, I don't know what's going on and I can't pretend to predict where what you're dealing with, but this is what it looks like to me. And that's a very real, that's a reality as well.
And this is my experience. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm experiencing mm-hmm. when I see the two of you do this. It's not giving any advice, mm-hmm. But it is confronting them with, you know, with your thoughts and with your feelings and your concerns. And actually what it is you're talking from your heart. Mm-hmm. And that is so meaningful. You're not talking from your head. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the advice I want to give you, you know, but you're talking from your heart, which really, really is very, very important to mom and dad.
That's good. And I think it prevents what we don't want to happen. And that is where the child becomes the confidant of one or both of the parents. And then the parents are like pitting, you know, the child. They're against one another, you know, and that can get, you know, I have had friends who said even in their teen years that they were brought into way too many confidences with their parents. And it put them on a level, a peer level, and they were very uncomfortable and it was very unhealthy. And so
right.
We don't want to see that.
And that's why it's good to write it out. Mm-hmm. Because when you write it out and you deliver it to dad, then, you know, you can say, hey, mom, you know, we're talking about this. Now, let me tell you what I told dad, mm-hmm. quote. And mm-hmm. you say, this is what I told dad. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of up to you,
right?
You know, okay. Up to mom and dad.
Well, that's a good strategy. Maybe one of you out there feels like that's something you need to do with your parents. We would encourage you to give that a try prayerfully, putting that to paper, and then let us know the outcome of that, because I think we can encourage one another as we attempt to be in good relationship with our parents, a way that's godly and supportive and helps them along. I know that relationships with adult children are one of the top calls that topics that you guys get in counseling. James, we get the call reports in our area, and so we're always very burdened by that at Boundless and recognizing that there is a lot of communication. There are a lot of adult children who want to relate to their parents well or want to do relationship well with them, and so we appreciate the good job that you guys
yeah,
do.
Yeah, and they really want to. It really comes from a heart of care and concern, mm-hmm. but the problem is you know, that they pick up mom and dad's problem and right. attempt to solve it. And sometimes it's best to just state a concern and put it back on their plate
right.
because it's their marriage. Right. It's their life.
Great. Well, editor@boundless.org is the email address you want to use if you want to submit a question for a future show. We will have one of our counselors or Candace or John or one of our regulars come in and go ahead and address that for you, because we certainly benefit from their experience and their wisdom and their advice. So please do write to us. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org, focused on the family.